Welcome to Sports Talk with Tonsoni, the Indiana Baseball Edition. I'm your host, Brian Tonsoni, and along with Chris Feeney, Josh Bennett, Cassidy Palmer, and Carl James, we will be bringing you information on Indiana baseball. Hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. I am your host, Brian Tonsoni, and finally, after a couple of days of technical difficulties, we are live and going to report on a great week for our Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana was 4-0 this past week and are headed now on a six-game winning streak into the Big Ten tournament. Here is a quick recap of this week's games. Midweek game at Louisville, Indiana wins 9-5. Cam Beachum pitched a great game as the starter, and the Hoosiers took a 3-1 lead into the ninth. Unfortunately, the Cardinals tied the game with the two-run homer in the ninth inning. However, IU responded in the 10th with Cole Barr getting a key hit to drive in the lead run, and then Matt Lloyd finished off the scoring with a monster three-run bomb for a six-run 10th inning. Tommy Summer picked up the win in relief. Heading to the last Big Ten series at home at the BART, first game, Indiana 6, Maryland 5, will forever be known as the Lazy Mary game, where a huge clutch three-run homer by Luke Miller, his second of the game in the bottom of the eighth, gave the Hoosiers the lead for good. After a long rain delay, the Hoosiers were able to make the comeback with Logan Kalitha and Miller each having two hits. Cade Crisco got the win. Matt Lloyd earned the save. Then Friday's game against Maryland, Indiana 5, Maryland 1, behind another great effort by the Bulldog himself, Paulie Milto, on the mound, the Hoosiers won game two of the series. Luke Miller and Matt Gorski each homered in the game. IU broke a 1-1 tie with two runs in the sixth on a base hit by Logan Sowers. Milto improved his record to 7-2. To end the weekend and end the season, Senior Day, Indiana won convincingly 13-3 over Maryland, a Senior Day blowout. For sure, Tim Heron went six innings, allowed one earned run in picking up his fifth win of the season. Logan Sowers had a senior day to remember with four hits, two home runs, and five RBI. Miller added three hits along with Jeremy Houston and Scott Bradley with two hits each. Indiana ends the regular season with a record of 37-15, is 14-9 in the Big Ten, and good for fifth place in that Big Ten. And that brings us to our opening segment, Hoosier Highlights, and there's a lot to be happy about this week. And I'm going to start it off. This team got back into winning ways, have won six in a row, getting the team back where we thought, getting the team back healthy. Luke Miller and Paulie Milto, after being out, have come back and led the resurgence. It seems like we have all assets moving forward in the right way, and I was very happy to see the season end that way. Carl, your Hoosier highlight of the week?
Specifically for me, it was the 10th inning of the Louisville game. Not just the fact that the team came back after almost winning it and then having the game tied, then having to go to extra innings and, you know, maybe squeaking out a run. I mean, the hit by Barr was huge, but the fact that they just kept piling on, and then that shot by Lloyd to tack on another three. It was a six-run inning, and it just made it feel completely like a blowout, despite the fact that it was, you know, an extra inning game. And that was absolutely, you know, fantastic, and I think a huge push to the confidence boost going into the Maryland series. Cassidy, what's your Hoosier highlight?
So before I get to my Hoosier highlight, we did have some breaking news today. Thanks to our technical difficulties, we were able to include this. We wouldn't have had it last night. We do have the All Big Ten selections. First team featured three Hoosiers: Matt Gorski in left, Matt Lloyd as a utility player, and Jonathan Stieber as a starting pitcher. Second team had a pair of guys, Pauly Milto as a starting pitcher and Scotty Bradley as a DH. Third team had, again, a couple of guys, Logan Sowers in right and Luke Miller at third. And then all freshman team does feature Drew Ashley at second. And the Big Ten Sportsmanship Award for IU went to BJ Sable. So huge congrats to all of them. That is fantastic. But for my highlight for the week, it's got to go to Logan on senior day. I mean, you can't script it any better than 2 home runs, 4 hits, 5 RBI for the senior on senior day, possibly quite possibly his last game at Bart Kaufman. That's just a special game. And it was also a special day for some of the little ones at the tailgate, as Josh can talk about.
Yeah, thanks, Cass. On Friday, Drew had to miss his kindergarten graduation ceremony so he and Bo could throw out the first pitch at the ballgame. But the game more than made up for it at the tailgate on Saturday. I want to thank everyone that was there at the tailgate for providing that moment for Drew and for the family. We love our baseball family. That was a great moment for us.
And Josh, I have some video of both the first pitch and of the graduation ceremony. Can I play that right now for you?
Absolutely.
All right. So for those listening and not seeing, we are looking at our young guys throwing out first pitches and a graduation ceremony at the tailgate. Here we go.
And Owen Bennett. Biggest supporters this season, attending over 20 games as members of the Bullpen Club. Thanks for your support of IU Baseball. All right, guys, let's see it.
Yeah! Yeah!
Let's hear it one more time for Andrew and Owen Bennett.
Go to Brian.
On this day, I declare Drew a graduate of kindergarten. Congratulations.
Woo!
Hey, you're now a graduate.
Yay!
And so that is our highlight to you, Josh. Thanks for letting us share in those magical moments. You had to feel really good in sharing the first pitch as a dad and also the graduation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to thank everybody that was there.
And you are very welcome. Part of what we like here at Talking Hoosier Baseball is the fact that it's a family atmosphere, and that goes to show what we, as a group, what the family means, and we are becoming a real close family. It was an honor, Josh, to take part in that ceremony. Thank you for asking. And now, unfortunately, a big member of our family, Chris Feeney, has had technical difficulties, and we're missing him tonight. And we wish he was on the show, and we have a special video for him too, but we're going to save it for when his technical difficulties are resolved so he can explain the great evening he had at the park Thursday. So we're going to save that, but we're going to go back to Josh for the Limo hats as he's taking filling the big shoes tonight. Josh, good luck.
Ugh, you're not kidding about that. Ugh. Out of anything to have to fill in the Limo hats. All right. These were selected by Feeney, though. So, and I have some of his notes, so hopefully I don't butcher it too much, but his blessing is on this. So for the Donato Award, the pitching award this week, we're going to go with Cam Beecham for his performance against Louisville, 5.2 innings, 3 hits, 5 strikeouts, and 1 run scored after he left. That was inherited, but just he was in absolute control. Kept the pitch count down and was steering the ship. That was big, big RPI game. Nice to get a win in that game. At one point, he sat down 9 in a row. So the Donato Award's going to Cam. The Tony Butler Award, Defensive Player of the week is going to go to what we think is probably the catch of the year. It was in center field on the finale on Saturday. Logan Kalitha had a ball smashed straight at him over his head and went back on it very well and may have jumped a little too early. I'm not sure that that's the case, but it looked that way. But just to have the concentration and focus to secure the catch while crashing into the wall and then come down with it to end that inning, that was a great play, probably the catch of the year. And then offense this week is going to go to the Big Ten Player of the Week, Luke Miller. He had 8 hits out of 15 at-bats, 6 runs, 6 RBI, 2 walks, a double, 3 home runs, and the absolute one of the biggest home runs we've seen at the bar recently in that Maryland game, the 3-run homer after we were trailing all game, gave up a run in the top half to go down 5-2, I think it was at the time, and then he gives us a lead there late in the 8th that set off some fireworks, but just a great week from Luke. So Kalitha's the Tony Butler Award, Luke is the Alex Dickerson Award, and Cam is the Donato Award.
And we're going to go with some cheese hats, some honorable mentions. I'm going to throw out Paulie Milto again. The dude just goes out and gets it done, get runners on base, doesn't faze him, throws strikes, gets a ground ball, gets out. Great performance on Friday again. Cassie, cheese hats.
I'm going to go with my Hoosier highlight pick, and I'm going to stick with Sours. I mean, he had a great weekend anyway before Sundays, Saturdays, whatever day's game. And just to do that on senior day, that's just still awesome.
Carl, honorable mention, cheese hats.
Yeah, my honorable mention is going to go to Matt Lloyd, and I'm not going to stick to one area because he did it with the bat and he did it on the mound. And, you know, there's a reason that he was honored by the conference the way he was. And it's because he is such a versatile player. And that bomb was a lot of fun to watch. It wasn't the game winner, but I think it just made everything so much calmer going into the bottom of the 10th inning to be able to have that lead. It was awesome. So I go with Matt Lloyd.
Does anyone remember there was another web gem in Saturday's game? I remember, I think Chris went da-da-da-da-da-da, and I thought nothing can compare with Kalitha's catch. That was unbelievable. But I thought I can't remember what that play was. Was it Jeremy at short? Anyone recall?
Jeremy had so many good plays at short. And that's the thing. I guess Jeremy kind of doesn't get the plays like Kalitha, just unbelievably crazy. But, I mean, the range he was showing this weekend, his ability to time and get to balls and make the throws, it was very impressive.
And he makes the tough stuff look easy.
Yeah.
I agree with both of you. He is just so smooth, and he's throwing with ease. It seemed like earlier in the year he was, you know, taking an extra step or something, and now he is just catching and firing and getting rid of that ball. And just fun to watch. And a lot of people, including myself, like to see the home runs and the batting average. There's nothing like good defense. And so that was pretty solid. So Carl, if you could you throw up the bracket, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Big Ten tourney now. And so as we know, they're heading to some place out west. And so we had several questions about, the Big Ten tournament, what the bracket was, and all of that good stuff. So we're going to give you a preview. But for those of you who are not sure where the tourney is being held. And I'd like to thank my friend Josh for contacting Peyton Manning and coming into the recording studio to help us out. But yes, the Big Ten tourney is in Omaha, Nebraska, a wonderful park where the College World Series is held. And as we go over Carl's screen here. The first game will be Michigan against Iowa early in the morning, 10 o'clock our time, 9 o'clock Central time, followed by Purdue versus Ohio State. Then the evening session will start out with Minnesota versus Michigan State. And the last game tomorrow or Wednesday, depending on when you're listening to the podcast, will be Illinois versus Indiana. Indiana's number 5 seed. The tournament is a double elimination tournament, so you have to lose twice before your tournament is ended. And there's various scenarios. On IUBase.com, there was an excellent write-up by Chris Feeney on explaining when you play and how the teams advance in the double elimination tournament. But we have some good baseball ready to be started tomorrow, and we're going to do a preview now of the two pods. So the first pod is teams 2-7, 3-6. And Carl, we'll get your face back on now, and go ahead and talk to us about the teams in that pod.
All right. Yes, I will get going on that. We've got Purdue is the 2 seed. Ohio State is the 7 seed. I'm going to kind of quickly go over some of the key players. Purdue is got a very strong presence by their catcher, Nick D'Alessandro, and their first baseman, Jackson McGowan, as well as a real strong closer in Ross Leonard, who we got to face a couple times. Ohio State is led by Noah McGowan, and he hurt us very badly out in Columbus. So he's someone we have to keep our eye on. Seth Kinker is their closer, and we saw a lot of him in Columbus. On the other game, Michigan, Iowa, Michigan, they their entire starting rotation made all Big Ten tournament selections. They also have a couple other Big Ten tournament selections, an outfielder and a designated hitter. Iowa has an all Big Ten first team outfielder in Robert Nystrom. And a starting pitcher, but since they're in the other bracket, we're not going to see that starting pitcher. And their designated hitter made the third team. So there's a lot of good quality teams on this side. Purdue in particular, we have faced them late. We faced them in a midweek. So they are 8-4 in their midweeks. We are 8-3. Michigan is 6-4. Ohio State is 9-3 in midweek, so they have had a really strong midweek performance. Iowa technically is only 3-3 because they played a lot of Division II schools in particular, as opposed to playing, you know, the real schools. Another thing I really like in general, hold on here. Just a little more technical difficulties there. Okay, there we go. You've been seeing the tournament bracket, which is fine. You're seeing the tournament bracket.
So, you're a lot better looking, though, Carl, than the tournament bracket.
All right. So, and actually, I'll go ahead and go to Cassidy about stats for these teams.
Yeah, so since we don't know who we're potentially facing out of here, I kept it pretty short on these guys. With the Iowa games that we played early on, the two games, because one was snowed out, it was a bit of both worlds, really. One of the games was right at IU season averages, and we won. The other game was way below the season averages, and we did not win. So with just the two games, it was hard to pull out anything meaningful, especially with how different those two games were. With Purdue, one of the things that stood out was both teams hit above their season averages, both in terms of just straight hits, straight batting average, and power. So that was really interesting to me because both teams do have some pretty good pitchers. With the Ohio State matchup, we had all the costly errors. IU gave up 4 unearned runs in 2 games that were decided by a total of 2 runs on the road. That was an unusual stretch. That was during the time when both Milto and Miller were out. So I wouldn't necessarily expect that again if we were to face them, but it is still a pretty tough matchup. Michigan, we did not play in the regular season. But one thing I saw, they move around the bases really well. They've scored 330 runs on the year on 694 total bases. To put that into context, IU has scored right about the same number of runs at 329, but it's been on 809 total bases. So that they really move runners around well.
And Carl, before you jump back in with your records, we wouldn't face any of these until game four, correct? When the switchover would happen?
Correct. Yeah. One way or another, whether we're the one switched over or one of them is the one. Yeah. It's we're talking about Saturday when the brackets switch. So Saturday and Sunday, we could see teams from the other pod.
Okay. And you have some interesting thing about records versus opponents.
Yeah. Actually, I already went over that for that pod. I've got more for the
Okay. So I'm sorry. Again, yeah. Flipping through some stuff here.
Yeah.
Let's go through then our pod 1, 8, 4, and 5.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. The number one is Minnesota. The number four is Illinois, who we're going to face. Indiana is number five. Michigan State is the number eight. So Michigan State and Minnesota are going to play. We're going to play Illinois first. There is some news, which is that Illinois has changed up. They're going to go with their Saturday starter instead of their Friday starter, Quinn Sinarkis, 6-1 with a 3.06 ERA. Against us, he was actually a tad bit more effective, even though Indiana won that game. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I don't know the reasons why the switch was made, but that's an interesting piece of news we have to share. Illinois is 6-3 on neutral sites. You can't talk about Illinois without talking about the Big Ten Player of the Year, their first baseman, Brent Spillane. He won the Big Ten Triple Crown with a 407 batting average, 22 home runs, 57 RBIs, and a 935 slugging percentage. This guy rakes. And our pitchers did a really good job of handling him and keeping him to a 2-9 when he played at the BART. They're going to have to do similar work tomorrow night as well. Another thing we saw at the BART was the great defense up the middle. Those guys really take away a lot of hits. So sometimes it's not just the pitching, but the defense that really takes away a lot of hits from Illinois. We could play the winner or the loser of the Minnesota game. Minnesota is just a huge team. They're just great bats. We saw their bats at the BART last year. We saw their bats up in Minneapolis when we went up to play them. And they have now added the Big Ten pitcher of the year, a freshman, Patrick Fredrickson. I'm pretty sure he'll be facing Michigan State. We'll be facing him because he usually goes second. That's what I would normally think is that that's who we're likely to face is Patrick Fredrickson. He's got a 1.8 ERA, and we struggled against him. So there's going to be a lot of pitching challenges, especially early in this tournament that we're going to have to face. Michigan State is no slouch. Even though they're only 20-30, and they are the last team in this tournament, with a 188 RPI, they are the one team that has beat Minnesota on a Friday. So Minnesota obviously is not probably extremely thrilled to be getting Michigan State right off the bat. So I would not call the first game by any chance, a gimme for them. The probable starter, if we were to face them in game two, is Mason Erla from Michigan State. He's 6-4 ERA with a 6-4 record with a 3.91 ERA. And he's pitched in six games of at least six innings and as little as two runs. So he's had a lot of quality starts. And this is somebody we definitely need to watch out for. Their top hitter is their third baseman, Marty Bacina. And he leads the team with 8 doubles, 6 homers, and 23 RBIs. So that's a look at the at that side of the bracket.
Cassie, your interesting stats on this side of the bracket.
Yeah, so I went a little more in depth with these teams because we do have a higher likelihood of we're definitely playing Illinois, and we have a high likelihood of playing Minnesota, playing Michigan. We're more likely to play these teams. And so with Illinois, starting with the team we play first, the first time we faced them, we averaged just 4 runs on 9 hits, which both of those are below the season average. But that's kind of inflated by a phenomenal game 3. Game 1, which I compiled these before they just changed the starter. But game 1, we scored just 2 runs on 6 hits, and we didn't do any better against Sinarkis. So this was also during the offensive slump with 6 players tallying no more than 1 hit per game. Several of those were 1 hit on the series. We had an extra base hit rate, so percentage of hits that go for extra bases, of just 23%, which was 9 percentage points below our season average. But it was also just 3 percentage points below Illinois' pitching staff rate. So they don't really give up too many extra base hits, which we really thrive on. On IU's pitching side, IU's pitching gave up just 2 runs on 7 hits. But more importantly, held their extra base hit rate down. It was just 18%, which was half of their season average. It's also 9 percentage points below IU's normal staff season staff rate. So if IU pitching staff isn't careful, water could find its level here, and that would be not good. And a lot of that would come from Spillane, most likely. On the Minnesota side, this was still during that offensive slump. Averaged just 3 runs on 8 hits on the series. But it was pretty unbalanced again. Just 1 run on 4 hits in game 2, which would be our likely opposing pitcher if we see them. This was half the run output compared to the season average, which is not ideal against one of the top teams. But again, don't necessarily expect too many more extra base hits off of Minnesota. They're only 24% of their hits given up are going for extra bases, whereas IU's offensive average is 32%. So one of those is going to have to bend, and we're hoping it's that offensive one. But even though the offense was down, the pitching had trouble too. They gave up about double the number of earned runs compared to the season average, 7 runs on 10 hits. This is thanks to Minnesota just clobbering the ball more than usual. 45% of their hits went for extra bases. Their season average is just 28%. They were seeing the ball well. And again, IU's season staff extra base hit rate is 27.1%. So it's possible again here that water can find its level, and that would be good on the IU side. With Michigan State, we didn't play them during the regular season. Don't have any of those stats to look at, but only 21% of their hits go for extra bases, which is pretty small. At the same time, their pitching staff is giving up 30% of their hits as extra base hits. So that could be an encouraging thing for IU should we play them.
Anybody have anything else, Carl?
Yeah,
anything else on this side of the bracket?
Just 2 more things. First is the record versus opponents. In the first game of the the season, excuse me, of a week. Illinois is 10-4. We are 8-6. In the second game of a series, Minnesota has been 10-4 on the year, just like we are. Michigan State has been 4-10. So we definitely would have an advantage in the normal run with that against Michigan State. These are also the teams we would likely play if we played in a third game, in an elimination third game. In a third game, we are 11-2, which is exceptional. Minnesota is 8-3. Michigan State is actually a respectable 7-5. Illinois is 7-7. And my last point, something I really like about the Big Ten tournament in general, is the fact that they make the coaches' interviews really entertaining, because the players will get right behind the coaches during the interviews. And the coaches are completely oblivious that there's anything weird going on behind them. They just completely don't know. They just talk about the game. They talk about the normal stuff that really isn't any big deal. And I find that very interesting and very entertaining.
It is amazing how the people being interviewed can keep their focus when that happens. And tremendous reporting, Carl, on the Big Ten. Cassie on the Big Ten. There you have it. A little bit of the schedule, a lot of the stats, a lot of the players to watch. The games start tomorrow. It is time for the Indiana Hoosiers to take the town of Omaha starting tomorrow. And for the fans who are out there jogging before the 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock start local Omaha time listening to our podcast, make sure you wear the colors proudly and cheer on the Hoosiers. We are now going to have end the podcast with just a round table of questions for people. And I'm going to throw one out. I'm going to warn the panel. I didn't have this on the podcast, but I thought after listening to the great analysis, a couple of things. Illinois did not see Pauly, right? I think he was out of that second game. Is that something you might think about? I know they've probably announced the starters already, but I was wondering, maybe Pauly goes against Illinois. They haven't seen him. Maybe save Pauly for Minnesota. They haven't seen him. So there's a little bit of an unknown. And the other thing is, how does Minnesota's power, they hit a lot of home runs against us, how does that play in that field where the prevailing winds are coming in? So I guess two questions. Who's Paul? You know, we save Paulie for Minnesota. Could there possibly, it won't switch now, but would you guys have considered that switch? And then the power, I'd like to see him hit some gap balls and see our Logan Kalitha and our Matt Gorski track down some of those extra base hits with that room and that wind. So some quick thoughts on that. Whoever wants to take it.
Yeah. I don't think at this point you're ever going to change up. We've had Steve on Friday and Pauly on Saturday. I think at this point there's no way as a coaching staff you can do that. That will, you know, that kind of changes things up to where they haven't been in that, you know, all year long. And then
I agree. I think the mental side would be a negative to doing that.
Yeah.
But didn't they do something similar in the regional last year, Carl?
Well, there's a difference there. And I think it was at that particular point, I think it was they kind of re-ranked the pitch. They had rest time and they kind of re-ranked the pitchers based on their performance up to that point. And that was the reason things have switched. And honestly, even strategically, I think the Stever Milto makes sense, because, you know, the goal is to win two. And your most likely scenario, most likely, not definite, but most likely, is you're looking at Minnesota in the second game. And while Pauly had a relief appearance against them, that was his first time pitching against real hitters in weeks. And we saw the real Pauly come back the next weekend. So, you know, nothing else worked against them. Let's try something new. And Pauly for us in this case is something new. So I think in many ways, it makes sense to have Pauly pitching the second game. But mostly I really just agree with Josh, which is that this is the rotation. This is what we're going to go with. This is what the team has done. This is what the team will do. We've got one of the best ERAs in the country. let's go with it.
And Carl, I think what backs that up is your records against the games. We have really good Saturday, Sunday numbers, or second game, third game numbers. So even if something should happen that we don't want to happen Monday, we can feel confident getting there. And then I really like our fourth and fifth starters, third and fourth starters against anybody. So we have some depth there. Cassie, I'm going to turn to you for, I don't know if you've gotten a weather report, but what do you think about home runs? We like to hit the home run, and I think Minnesota scored a lot of runs against us by hitting the home run in their park. But this plays a little different, and might we see a different result against the Minnesota?
I would think so. You'll see the occasional ball get out of TD Ameritrade, but not many. I mean, we saw Schwarber just hammer some to dead center field that are just easy routine can of corn fly balls. Really, I think the bigger thing here is going to be the small ball, the getting the Gorskys, Kalithas, getting them on base and moving them around. But on that weather front, it is at least mild chance of storms throughout the week, which is going to make the humidity could make it even harder to hit the ball out. In addition to the wind and the dimension, it's not going to be easy to hit the ball out this week. For tomorrow, because I know we're all concerned about possible delays in start time with a 10 o'clock Eastern first pitch, but tomorrow throughout the day is looking pretty well, like a solid 15% chance all day. Might see a little bit of rain, but it shouldn't be enough to really delay anything by the time it gets to IU, Illinois. Again, on Thursday, there's a little chance around noon for some storms, but mostly 15 to 20% chance. It's probably going to get wet, but as long as it's not lightning, it should be all right. Friday's going to be a little bit of a test to that.
And I tell you what, this crew is special. They don't like surprise questions. They've told me not to surprise them, but I surprised them, and they handled it really well. This is becoming the awesome crew of five, and we're missing Chris tonight. But let's go to some of the questions I did prepare for you. Carl, best scenario for IU?
Best scenario would be a four-game sweep. But when I really say best scenario, the real piece of this, and I'm going to address the elephant that has been pushed out there by some, even the national media, that there is still a sliver of a hope that we could have temporary bleachers at the BART. I do stress that this is a sliver of a hope. It is extremely tiny. It would require about 20 different baseball games to all go exactly the way we want them, which means it's not an impossibility, but boy, it's hard, because sweeping is not going to be enough. Sweeping could possibly get Indiana into the 18-19 RPI range, possibly. But because the resume still lacks any key series wins, no bad losses, but without any key series wins, it's hard to make the case for a host without a top 16 RPI. So to get to that top 16 RPI basically means that all the teams from 15 to 23 we have to be able to pass all of them, which means that especially those at the 15, 16, 17, 18 range have got to do really bad and fall off. So it could happen. The good news is they're mostly in different conferences. So the idea that the table could run, it's not that one of them has to do well. No, they could all do poorly, but is that possibility out there? Yes. But, I would definitely not bet on it, and I would not bank on it, and I'm not really holding out my helps for it. So,
Carl, you're a genius, but now you got me back to being nervous this week. I'm watching games I'm not watching games, but I'm checking the scores. Yeah, maybe I'm watching games when I at school, but to see who wins and asking you who to root for, and I had put that out of my mind. But thanks for bringing that back, and at least that gives us some hope. Josh, I don't like to spend a lot of time on this, but worst case scenario in the Big Ten tournament for our Hoosiers.
Brian, it looks like right now we're comfortably in as a 2 seed, I would think. And as Carl said, barring a miracle, it could happen, but we're probably not going to host. So I'm not really worried about a tune out scenario, you know, being a worst case scenario. I don't think that's going to affect that much. I'd say the worst thing that could happen to IU is an injury to a key piece of the puzzle. I mean, it's way too late for that to happen. I mean, we've been through it this season, so I'm sure somebody would step up as they've done. But, I mean, that would have to be worst case scenario is a big injury. Second in my mind would be a defeat in the championship game after some extra inning games where we just, you know, run everybody to the limit and have nothing to show for it. It's baseball. They're used to playing 4 games a week, but I'd like to be fresh if we aren't going to be bringing home any hardware. I feel the same way about it with the basketball tourney. You know, if you don't win, lose the first game and get some rest. So that's my worst case is an injury or a loss in the championship game.
Cassie, I'm coming back to you with a little bit of surprise. You talked about small ball in the TD Ameritrade Park. What other keys, maybe some stats, maybe some categories, do you think will allow Indiana to be successful in this tournament?
Well, I think one of the big things, especially with this small ball, is on the defensive side, we need to not commit stupid errors. We've been mostly good. We had a bit of a stretch where we were committing several errors that were very costly. But in general, the errors have been held to a minimum the last couple of weeks. Nebraska was a little high, but was still average of 1 a game. Ohio State wasn't too many errors. They were just all costly. So as long as we minimize those defensively, that will go a long way, because we might not necessarily, just the same way as our pitchers might not be giving up extra base hits, our offense might not be getting them in that ballpark. So we might not be able to work around those costly errors as much. At the same time, kind of in the same vein, we need to cut down on those silly base running mistakes. Overrunning a base on the turn, getting caught too far off. We need to cut out the really silly ones. If it's an aggressive play, close play at the plate, and that's fine. But the ones where you get picked off because you're too far off, or you took too hard of a turn, things like that, we need to cut down on those to try to maximize the number of runs that we can get.
You took mine right out for me, the base running things. But I agree wholeheartedly on that nothing makes you more frustrating than an out on a base pass that's not aggressive. And I'll go back to the costly errors too, that runs up the pitch count. And then in a long tournament, 4, 5, 6 game tournament, then you got to get into your bullpen, which I will bring up as a key. I think we need to refine our bullpen. We need to get some guys some confidence back. That have been hit hard lately. We know they're good pitchers. We believe in them. We got to find the right time to bring them in. And the guys who have been coming in, the Sal Franks, the Criscos, need to continue. And Matt Lloyd needs to be a shutdown guy when we can have him. But we're going to need some arms at some point in this tournament. And so cutting down those costly errors. So I think the bullpen, let's keep the solid approach that we've had at the plate, get runners on, move them over, get them in, and let's see where we're at starting tomorrow. So next, Carl, coming to you on this one, pick a couple teams that really need to do well here in the tourney, either to make sure they're still in or to try to get in. Which 2-3 teams is this tournament really, really, really important for?
First of all, will be Illinois. Pretty much everybody has Illinois right in the middle of the bubble. So they're looking at a situation where they're really neither in nor out. And how they play in this tournament is going to be a big determining factor. And then, of course, there is the thing that faces any bubble team, which is the concept of the stolen bid, which could also happen in this tournament. So, you know, for Illinois, not only do they have to win, but they have to hope that an Iowa or a Michigan State does not win the whole tournament and take away an at-large bid, which, by the way, that's those two teams. That's all they can do. They can just try to win the whole tournament. They're not going to get in any other way. So that's why it's so important for Iowa and Michigan State, because they're playing for their lives. And Illinois, you know, is sitting on the bubble. Michigan is on the wrong side of the bubble. Purdue is on the right side of the bubble. And, you know, so there's that everybody in this tournament has something to play for. I would, you know, besides maybe Minnesota, there's a lot of people that say Minnesota's hosting, even if they go 0-2. So,
Carl, how many games do you think Purdue has to win to be safe? I know they're in the right side now. I don't think they can necessarily afford an 0-2, correct? What are your thoughts on Purdue?
Well, again, if there are no stolen bids, Purdue's probably okay with 0-2. That sweep against Michigan was loud. And they have done some phenomenal things this year. That team has made a huge comeback. So I think Purdue is probably safe barring stolen bids, but they're probably going to be some stolen bids. So they're probably going to need to win, you know, at least one game. If I were them, I wouldn't feel comfortable unless I had two or three.
And a shout out to our rivals. We discussed today that it's time that, we actually call them Purdue instead of the other names that we've been given, and their play on the field has deserved a little bit of recognition from the Talking Hoosier baseball podcast. You know, to finish second in the Big Ten, we hope we go further than they do, but that's why we're referring to them as Purdue, I think rightfully so. Let's talk a little bit here as we start to wrap up the show. What players will surprise for IU in the Big Ten tourney, meaning they'll be better than expected and be productive in a win? Cassie, let's go to you.
So we've talked about a bit, but to me it's some of the lesser thrown bullpen arms. I know that we've come to expect these spectacular long 6-plus inning quality start outings from the starting pitchers. And that could still very well be the case the first 2 to 3 games. But if the Hoosiers stick around longer, then some of the non-back-end bullpen arms really need to step up. I'm talking guys like Cade Crisco, possibly Brian Hobby, possibly either Austin Long or Nick Eaton. We saw Austin Long come in the last game, and he hadn't pitched in like a month and a half. So any of these guys could easily have the opportunity to step up in big situations, and they're all capable of doing so, even the freshmen. And so getting some of those non-BJ Cal Maddie, who seem to always come up in the games, we need some of those non-starters, non-back-end guys to do well.
Is Sloan available? We haven't seen him for a while.
We haven't seen him or Connor Maness in a while. So I don't know if there's anything.
There might, you know, we don't get information necessarily about injuries and that, but we haven't seen Connor for a while, so that would lead, no, I think, to something going on there, possibly
even something minor.
Yeah, that kept him out of sickness or a slight injury. So yeah, it'd be nice to see some of those arms. Chris had sent in that he thinks Laren Eustace, look for him. I think you're really important in a pinch running situation to steal some bases and get a run. That might be important, but also maybe defensively, again, with a bigger park. And then Chris also said, look for Elijah Dunham to come in and maybe get a big pinch hit at some situation. Carl, the players that you would maybe expect to rise above that we don't count on in a starting lineup.
Okay. I'm going to have really one major pick here, and that is going to be, and I'm piggybacking to some degree on Cassidy, but I'm being a little bit more focused here, and that's Brian Hobby. But specifically the fact that if Indiana loses a game and keeps going, to a fifth or a sixth game, we're going to need a fifth or a sixth starter. And although Brian Hobby hasn't filled that role this year, we haven't had to go to six games. And Brian Hobby is somebody that can start. He can pitch a lot of innings. You may not necessarily expect, you know, six innings, two runs, but the hope is that the offense can produce, you know, 8 to 12 runs anyway. So he's somebody that can throw strikes, that can eat innings, and be able to keep the team in the game so that the bats can go win a championship.
Very good. Josh, do you have anybody in mind that you'd like say might rise up?
Just exactly what Cass and Carl said. I think we're all thinking the same thing right now. You know, this team is built for a tournament with our pitching staff, and we haven't had to use a lot of those guys. Austin came in. We hadn't seen him for a month and a half, and he goes 1-2-3 with two strikeouts like he's, you know, been pitching every day. Brian hasn't given up a run in conference season. It's only 4.1 innings, but still, he can do it. Sally's one run in 7 conference innings. So I think the guys that we haven't had a whole lot of time on the mound will absolutely have to step up for us to be successful. I'm sure we'll get a pinch hitter or a guy coming in. You know, maybe I know Jeremy's a regular, but at the bottom of that lineup, somebody to get hot like Will Hite did a couple years ago that just can absolutely carry a team and comes out of nowhere. So I'm sure we'll get something like that. But I think the pitchers that we're not used to seeing every single game or every other game, that's going to be somebody that'll surprise us.
You know, I was going to mention Jeremy too at the bottom of the order. He had a game there. He had a couple hits and his defense has been great. And Cassie said it really well with, we need to play really outstanding defense. And so maybe Jeremy's that guy that we look at as just that ninth hitter, but he's going to have a maybe an MVP type of performance. So quickly, as we wrap up, let's go around and talk, maybe make predictions. But just what do we think is going to happen here? We'll start with you, Cassie. What do you think is going to happen with our Indiana Hoosiers? And it's okay to pick a championship because we're fans.
Oh, yeah. And I think, again, with this pitching staff, like we've talked about, a championship is possible. But it's going to be tough facing teams like Minnesota, facing an Iowa team we kind of struggled against, possibly facing an Ohio State team we struggled against. Even Purdue was really strong. I mean, these teams are tough. There's a reason they're in the Big Ten tournament, and I was talking with my dad this afternoon, and we were talking about how baseball is even more so than pretty much any other sport. Baseball is one. There's a reason these games are played, because any team can beat anybody on any given day. All that being said, I think we could have a pretty good chance of getting to the championship game. I don't know. I don't think we go 4-0. I think that's a pretty tough ask. But I think we could make the championship game. And from there, it's going to depend who we're facing and how many bullpen arms have been thrown each way.
Very good. Josh, your thoughts on the tournament?
Yeah, it's tough to predict a one-and-done scenario or a double elimination. You never know. You get in that loser's bracket the first game, and it makes it tough. But I think our team is mentally prepared for this. And I think coach has done a good job getting everybody, you know, on the same page and a lot of playing time. An example of that would be, you know, Friday night, the 8th inning after Luke flipped the switch and gave us the lead. You know, the Maryland pitcher buzzes Ryan's head, and they kind of started barking back and forth, and Coop runs in there and separates them to save Ryan from maybe getting ejected if it had gone on there. So I think everybody's committed even to that level. Everybody's on the same page and fired up and ready to win. So it's hard to make predictions, but I think they're mentally ready to go.
You know, and I think you're absolutely right there. I think coach needs to get some credit too, because in that long stretch, a lot of us were thinking players were pressing and the coaches were trying to pull certain strings, and it just seemed like nothing was working. And the coach always gets it when things aren't going well, but obviously something was done over that weekend in Nebraska and Louisville and Maryland, where the team was rallied back together. And give it to the captains for doing a good job, and also give Limo and staff some credit there for, I agree with you, Josh. It seems like this team is locked and ready, but it's baseball and anything can happen. Carl, your thoughts and predictions.
I would say many of the same things, which is that given the depth of the pitching staff, this team is built for a tournament. I absolutely agree with that. We've heard that from pretty much everybody on the panel. I would make one observation, though, which is that Indiana does not need to win this tournament. And to some degree, that can be a handicap, particularly you get to a championship game. And if you're playing a Michigan State, a Michigan, or an Iowa, who winning is the only way they get into a regional, this is a team that might throw the guy they threw on Thursday again on Sunday, or the guy they threw on Wednesday again on Sunday. And we're not going to do that. Jonathan Stever is going to make one appearance in this tournament, and that's it. So when you keep that in mind, sometimes the stolen bid scenario, this is kind of what can set up that stolen bid scenario, is that, you know, we're not going to go get hurt over winning this trophy, because we're going dancing regardless. So,
yeah, I think that's a really outstanding point. I think we lose one of the first two, and I hope it's the second one, but I think we lose one of the first two, and then our depth in pitching takes over. We win the third game, and then we're into the double elimination part against the other bracket. I think we flip right to the other bracket, and I think we're better than that other bracket. So I can see a scenario where we win one or two and get to the championship game. And as Carl said, then depending on who we're playing and what arms are left. But I really believe that, a Beecham, if he's fourth right now in that first Saturday game, throws a gem. I think Heron throws a gem in game three. I think all our pitchers are going to do well, but when you're playing Illinois, number four seed, and maybe someone Saturday with the Fredrickson, I think that's maybe a scenario. I do think we play on the weekend, and that's my prediction. I always want us to win a championship. So thank you for hanging with us, all of our followers and those who listen live and those who are waiting for the podcast and information to show up on iubase.com. We did have some technical difficulties in multiple locations. We will try to make sure we run a little bit smoother next week, but thank you for your patience. And so this will do it for Talking Hoosier Baseball. Please find all future podcasts on Sports Talk with Tonsoni, which can be found on your favorite podcast source, as well as under the Talking Hoosier Baseball tab on iubase.com. And please check out iubase.com all week for all that Big Ten action. Follow on Twitter at iubase17. Follow this podcast at CUatTheBart on Twitter. And visit iubase.com to see other articles and other posts from our team. So for everyone, I'm Brian Tonsoni. Go Hoosiers. See you at the BART next year. Maybe.